Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and of course Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films are Challengers, The Beast, and Late Night with the Devil.
Well, I would like to start off this week by talking about a sports movie, Challengers. This is a tennis movie, and it is very much about tennis, although it's also very much about romance. It was directed by Luca Guadagnino, who is, I think, a very interesting filmmaker. He's done some really good movies, and also some movies that I don't relate to all that much. But his best work is really, really good. A movie many years ago called I Am Love, in which almost every shot is just an exquisite composition and beautiful to look at. I'll also mention a really good horror movie, a remake of the old Italian horror movie Suspiria, which he did a few years ago. So obviously a very versatile filmmaker. And now, yep, we have a sports movie. So Challengers stars Mike Faston, Josh O'Connor, and Zendaya. And the first two people I just mentioned are tennis players. And importantly, they have known each other for most of their lives. They went to school together. They've always been really, really close friends, and they've both been totally involved in tennis. And of course, they are rivals as well in tennis. And the movie very much deals with that. They are the closest of friends and also very intense rivals. Well, the rivalry takes on a new dimension when they both happen to meet another tennis player, a young woman named Tashi. And she's quite beautiful, and she's also another talented person at tennis. And oh gosh, which one of the two guys is she going to fall in love with, or are they both going to fall in love with her, etc.? That is one of the things that the movie is about, and of course it is also very much about their rivalry in tennis, and also the changing currents of their friendship as time goes by. Now, Challengers leaps about in time a very, very great deal. It seems like every few minutes there's another title on the screen saying a long time ago or 20 years from now. It's not quite like that, but there's a lot of jumping around in time, so you have to sort of keep track not only of where the narrative is at any given moment, but on, you know, just what the characters' emotions and relationships and feelings about each other and about their game and all this stuff, just what these things are. And I think that Guadagnino keeps that fairly clear for the audience. It's a movie you can, you know, you don't have to labor a lot to keep track of things. He does a lot of the work for you as a filmmaker, but you do have to kind of pay attention to this movie or you'll get a little bit lost along the way. Now, I liked a lot of the acting in Challengers. I think that Josh O'Connor, by the way, he is just a terrific actor. He's turning into a favorite of mine. I first really noticed him in the series, the TV series The Crown, where he plays Prince Charles, and he is just so excellent in that. And then more recently, in fact, within the past few months, really, a movie called La Chimera, where he plays a very, very different kind of character. And here he's very different again. And he's always persuasive and always interesting and always just really likable to watch. I just enjoy watching Josh O'Connor. The other principals, Mike Faced and Zendaya, are also just fine. They get the job done. I wasn't so fond of her as I was about the two male characters, but hey, that's just my own personal inklings and inclinations at the moment. So I like the acting a lot. The filmmaking looks really snazzy. My gosh, everything is colorful. The editing is razor sharp. And of course, there are these tennis scenes where we're following the bouncing ball, but Guadagnino never runs out of places to put the camera. So sometimes the ball is coming right at us, and sometimes the ball is going right away from us, and sometimes the ball is going one way and sometimes the other way. Now, that's fairly standard for tennis movies, but in this case, he really makes the most of modern day cinematographic and editing technology to give a really, let's just say that the tennis scenes have a whole lot of zip. They really have a lot of energy and they keep things going. Now, with all this saying, I like the acting. I like the tennis looked great and all that. I can't say that I was really captivated by Challengers all the way through. It's a long movie. It's well over 2 hours. And at times, I just didn't think it was all that interesting. So, you know, it's not a movie that I'm a big fan of, or a big admirer, I should say. But that said, it's doing very well at the box office. It has a lot of admirers, people who like it a lot more than I do, and I like it okay. And I think it's going to be one of the more talked about movies of this year. Also, I think that the acting is very likely to show up again when the award seasons come around at the end, maybe especially Josh O'Connor, who is my favorite of the three principals. I think the movie sometimes gets a little bit coy in the way that it deals with sex and romance and stuff like that. There are little hints of homoerotic attraction between the two male friends and all this, which I think is just sort of par for the course for the movies today and is not really handled all that interestingly. That said, go for the tennis, maybe go for the romance, and you'll probably have a reasonably good time at Challengers. Now I would like to talk about a movie which is so, so different, and it is called The Beast. And this is a new movie by Bertrand Bonello, a French filmmaker, and it is called The Beast, and that may sound like a horror movie, and in a way it is a horror movie. Then again, it is based on a Henry James novella from many years ago called The Beast in the Jungle. This is certainly a work that I'm familiar with, and the movie, let's just say, uses a little bit of it and then takes off in all sorts of other directions. One way of describing the Henry James work, The Beast in the Jungle, is that it is about a man who is always expecting, and he has lived his life expecting, a terrible catastrophe of some sort to overtake him and lay him low. And that is really what this thing's about, what the fiction is about. And it is very much about feeling haunted by something without quite knowing what that something is. And that is basically the theme that Bonello and the others take up in this new movie called The Beast. Now, it is very different from the Henry James novella in most ways, partly because it takes place in three very different time periods. We are sometimes in 2014 in Los Angeles. We are sometimes in Paris, way back in 1910. And then sometimes we are in the future, the American future, in 2044. So, this is a real time-jumping movie. However, it has main characters who appear, although in different guises, different points in this time frame. And the main one is named Gabrielle, and she is played by the wonderful, wonderful Léa Seydoux, who is just gorgeous and beautiful and gift to look at throughout the entire movie. So, okay, in these three different places, she is a different person. We start off the movie when she's an actor, and we start off the movie in Los Angeles, where she is appearing in front of a green screen, one of those high-tech movie-making techniques, where she is doing all sorts of horrified reactions to things, and later on, the monster, the beast, will be dubbed into the scene, or, you know, overlaid on it through video technology. So that's what we see at the beginning of the movie. It introduces us to the idea of a beast. It introduces us to the idea of not knowing what that beast is, since we don't see this monster. It hasn't been placed there yet. It introduces us to the idea of menace, and it very much introduces us to the character of Gabrielle, played by Léa Seydoux. So, okay. Later on, we will see similar stuff going on. She is, again, an actor. However, back in 1910 in Paris, she is a very wealthy woman whose husband owns a doll factory, and that brings all sorts of other kinds of simulations into play. In the very opening scene, we had that green screen, the idea that later on a beast will be laid in through video technology. Now she is married to the owner of a doll factory. Again, another kind of simulacrum. So, okay, so that's fine. And then in the 2044 scenes, way, way, way in the future, it seems that AI, artificial intelligence, has more or less taken over the world, and she is applying for a job, and she is told that she has too many emotions to be suitified for this job. So they say, hey, you know, we will be glad to get rid of all of your emotions. If you will, we'll just submit to this procedure, and then you'll get the job and you'll have a happy future. So she has to decide whether she's going to do that or not. So I'm giving a kind of a rushed summary of what these basic plots in the movie are. The movie jumps around a lot. Again, not every scene is really fully realized. Sometimes Bonello's heart seems into it more than at other times. And then there are certainly other characters in the movie. Maybe one of the most interesting ones is a young incel who is apparently stalking our main character, our main female character. And he is all too familiar from today's sort of pop culture and is a very, very menacing character. He appears to be really possibly a very violent person who may pose enormous dangers to Gabrielle. In the meanwhile, she is house-sitting in this sprawling, ultra-modern mansion where she is not familiar with the territory and isn't really quite sure what to do about this young incel who is stalking her by electronic means, and perhaps not just by electronic means. So this is all this stuff is going on in The Beast. The Beast is intellectually ambitious in a way that few of today's movies are. I would say it is intellectually ambitious to a fault, which is to say it takes on more than it can really fully chew. That said, it is so refreshing to see a movie which takes on a lot and which tries to be ambitious and which takes on various narrative themes, various emotional themes, and various social themes, the ideas of AI and so forth, and shows how catastrophes can recur in history. And ultimately, I would say that the beast in The Beast is the past. That is what is haunting people. That is what is haunting everybody. But other people may interpret the film very differently. In any case, anybody who wants something that they can really sink their teeth into and think about and deal with as a really ambitious and well-made movie, The Beast is the film for you. It is certainly one of the most ambitious movies we've seen so far this year, if not necessarily the very best. And finally, it seems like every darn week I got a horror movie to talk about. Well, I kind of like horror movies, but they do seem to come out with enormous regularity these days. And the one I want to talk about right now has been out for a little while already. It's called Late Night with the Devil. And hey, as horror movies go, it's fun. I think it's one of the best horror movies I've seen in a while. Not one of the deepest, not one of the most thoughtful, not one of the most stimulating in intellectual terms, but it's a lot of fun to watch. So here we have a movie which is almost entirely a movie of a TV show. We are back in the 1970s, and there is a guy named Jack Del Roy, and he has his own late night TV show, where he does all the things that late-night TV hosts have always done. He has guests, he talks to the guests, he tries to be entertaining, he gives a monologue and all that stuff. So almost this whole movie is that TV show one night, a Halloween night back in the 1970s, and also stuff that goes on during the commercial breaks and during various disasters that take place while the show is actually on the air. So that is what this movie is. So poor Jack Del Roy, and this is, such a big part of the movie. He is furious that he has never managed to get the top rating one night. Johnny Carson always beats him. So he is desperate to do something, anything that will boost his ratings. So this particular night, Halloween night, he's got some pretty good guests lined up. He's got a psychic named Christou, who will get in touch with the dead through members of the audience. He has got a former magician who is now one of these professional skeptics who goes around debunking psychic phenomena. His name is Carmile the Conjurer, and he is always interrupting people and being skeptical and debunking everything. And then there is a parapsychologist, someone who deals with the occult in a scientific way. And she is played by Laura Gordon. And she has written a book called Conversations with the Devil, which is about her relationship with a young woman who has been, or actually a girl, who was rescued from a satanic church and who is another guest on the show. So what a bunch of people. We have a psychic. We have a debunker. We have a woman who is engaged with scientific parapsychology. And we have a little girl who she rescued from a satanic cult. And all of this while our main character, Jack, is trying so desperately to get higher ratings on his show. So, is this fun to watch? It's a lot of fun to watch. I just thought that the acting was just a lot of fun. The movie, by the way, it was directed by a couple of Australian filmmakers, Cameron Cairns and Colin Cairns. Very, very well directed. David Desmalchian is excellent as the TV host. He is so realistic. He is so exactly like a late-night TV host. And the others are really good, too. Laura Gordon, who plays the parapsychologist, Ian Bliss, who plays the skeptic, Faisai Bassi, who plays Christou, and etc. Ingrid Torelli is really marvelous. That's little girl Lily. Oh, she looks very sinister and very beautiful at the same time, which is not the easiest trick to pull off. Anyway, all these people are hopping around throughout this show. Again, we just have the TV show that is the movie, but we see what goes on behind the scenes. And let me just say that catastrophe strikes multiple times during this movie. Now, the special effects in this movie are the over-the-top, in-your-face, gross-out effects that it's impossible to take seriously. So, all right, the horror in this movie is not all that horrific. That said, it's pretty graphic, pretty explicit, so look out if that's not the sort of thing you want to see, but it's fun precisely because it's so ridiculous on a lot of levels. The TV show itself is entertaining to watch, even though it's also ridiculous. The movie itself is entertaining to watch, even though it's also ridiculous. So if you want to see a good, sort of a half-spoof, half-serious take on late-night TV and Satanism and horror and all that stuff, then Late Night with the Devil, a very appropriate title, by the way, is the movie for you. I found it not one of the very greatest, maybe, but one of the most entertaining horror movies I've seen in quite a while. So that is my, I hope, not too horrific story this week.
For which we thank you, as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films Challengers, The Beast, and Late Night with the Devil.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.